Thank you. I wanted to approach this in a different way. There's been a lot of talk about a desire for regulation, a desire for different forms of regulation. But I don't like to pose the question, why regulation at all? It seems to me that the law is the basic foundation of regulation. Society sets laws for us to comply with, whether we're news media, whether we're journalists, whether we're bloggers, whoever we are. And it seems to me that increasingly, when we are in an environment where the regulation is nationally based, the platforms are different technologies and have different types of regulation around them, the question has come to me as to why we now feel that regulation is appropriate. I think we have to go back and fundamentally review that. And I think that the question that I would have, and I think I come from a position that I accept, that, you know, out of the phone hacking and all the rest of it, we are getting evidence of wrongdoing. From that will undoubtedly flow criminal charges, and rightly so. But they are criminal charges. They are wrongdoing. We saw the rather pusillanimous response of the regulators. We've seen that the regulators have actually been unable to deal with this. And whether they are regulators dealing at some of the more the statutory end of the market, at Ofcom, or indeed at the self-regulatory end of the market, they're still not actually able to deal with it in any effective way. And I think let's just look at the history of regulation. Regulation worked when there was broad agreement at a time when there were nationally based print and broadcast and radio. And it worked because there was broad standards which were agreed broadly amongst the people who were delivering content. And the content was delivered in very limited ways. Now we're in an environment where media spreads across borders. And if you have a regulatory framework in one country which is very, very tight, then what will happen is you will have a free market in regulatory arrangements. And let's just take as our first example of that, the first international regulatory arrangements, which was Broadcasting Without Frontiers, where you are or were broadcast, you were regulated by the country of uplink. Now, many of you will remember MedTV, the Kurdish television station, which had serious problems in relation to its Ofcom, or its predecessors to Ofcom, in fact, but it had real problems with its license in this country. And what did it do? It arbitraged and went to other countries. Now, the presumption underlying, unsaid, unspoken, below Broadcasting Without Frontiers is that regulation, we're dealing with television, we're dealing with satellite broadcasters, and therefore we must be dealing with major corporations who will be caught. In fact, MedTV was servicing the largest stateless nation on the planet, namely the Kurds, but actually was operating on a shoestring. And that was the first one that worked. And they have actually, they were chased by the Turks around a number of different countries. But, of course, what happened was that they just went to the countries that were easiest to get licenses in. And so they got the easiest and, in many cases, no regulation whatsoever. That then moved on, because what happened was that because we have a very peculiarly tough regulatory framework in this country, some of the mainstream broadcasters, and I would give you CNBC as an example, decided to bring their programming that they were using in America over here and make it, and suddenly found that they were falling foul of the Ofcom rules. So, for example, there was a program that they were broadcasting, had been broadcasting for a long, long time, called the Wall Street Journal Editorial Board. And the idea behind this program was that you saw, in a sort of fly-on-the-wall kind of approach, people who sat in the editorial meeting at the Wall Street Journal, this is all pre-Murdoch, of course, sitting around the table discussing the issues of the day and what the news priorities might be. This was banned by Ofcom on the grounds that it was product placement and advertising for the Wall Street Journal. So the Wall Street Journal came to me and said, what can we do about this? We think this is balmy. And I said, well, I think what we should do is continue to make the program, fire the signal, take the signal by cable up to Camden, and then fire it across to Luxembourg, an uplink from Luxembourg. And that's exactly what they did. So effectively putting a route round the Ofcom regulation. And this is an EU partner. I mean, you can go to any of the countries within the EU in order to get this kind of regulation. So regulation isn't working. So the question is, what will work? And I would put it to you that the law will work. The law has reciprocal arrangements for working between countries, which are getting tighter and tighter as we move forward, particularly within the European Union, but also more broadly. So I think that that is the way I think we should be going. I look at Leveson, and I think that there's some really interesting things about Leveson. Leveson will do a very good job of analysing the history. I think he will say who he thinks is telling the truth and who's telling fibs. And I think he'll be pretty much right. I think he'll get that on the money. I think the problem with it is that he's already said that he won't do TV and radio. He's already said he won't do blogs. He's already said he won't do internet. He's already said he won't do really anything other than broadsheet print or newspaper print media. So the question is, what's left? If we're also reading our newspapers off a tablet, who's regulating that? And it seems to me increasingly with content, with moving image content within it, there's increasing fuzziness around regulatory framework. And rather than posit the three layers of hell that Lara had put forward, I would posit to you perhaps that we should work on the innate good sense of crowds. Work on the fact that people understand that if they listen to Joshua Rosenberg on the BBC or read him in the newspaper, that they know it's true because he comes with an imprimatur. The organisation he's working for comes with an imprimatur. And it's those imprimatur which actually have the value these days, not the regulators. The regulators, members of the public, don't see the regulators. They are peculiarly anonymous. I have been a regulator. I was a regulator at PhonePlay Plus in its previous incarnation as Ixtis. I was also a regulator at the Internet Watch Foundation, the first chair of the Internet Watch Foundation. You know, they are supremely anonymous. What you want is to tell people and educate people about where to go and what you want for reliable information. And then what you want is to ensure that those providers are properly regulated by the law. So I think that that is the area that I wanted to get into. And I think what we've got here is a clash. There's academic literature on the stuff between the libertarian theory, which I suppose I expose, about the free market of ideas and the free market of information and the free market of regulators relying on the innate good sense of crowds, if you will, and the sort of social responsibility theory. And I think we are in an era where social responsibility theory just doesn't work in the societies in which we live and in which we operate. So for me, that's where I would come out. And I know that you're worried about poison pen. I'm the victim of many poison pens. I had the pleasure of representing a gentleman who was not entirely popular with the world, Julian Assange. And during that time, I got quite a lot of poison pen correspondence. I had my Wikipedia page damaged every day with very personal abusive stuff. Taking proceedings against the Catholic Church has engendered similar correspondence, anonymous correspondence. But I say that's part of free speech. That is a right. There is a right to free speech. And that's part of what I have to put up with within the law, provided people don't transgress the law. And that's what I would have to say. Thank you.